And we are still in January, but I feel like this podcast is all about February.
Why is that?
Oh, I'm glad you asked.
Because I don't feel like it's February yet.
I know. Yeah. Well, we're doing a movie this week sort of inspired by the Olympics, which start next month.
Oh, do they?
They do, yeah.
Yeah, you know I don't care about the Olympics, so.
I don't think anyone does because this whole China stuff, which is unfortunate for the athletes, but
yeah,
we are very excited. We have one of my very good friends on from college who's going to join us to talk about this movie.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I feel like all of my stories this week have something to do with love.
Oh.
February has Valentine's Day.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah. So are you ready for this, Anne?
I couldn't be more ready.
This is That's Outrageous, and I am Chrissy.
And I'm Anne, and this is the podcast where apparently we're talking about love.
We are. We don't often delve into love.
No, I mean, no.
These are outrageously good stories about love. Well,
right. Well, I'll be the judge of that. Let's hear it.
Yeah. Well, let's start with, they're all so good. All right, where to start? Let's start with this one. In World War II, an American soldier wrote a letter home to his mother in Massachusetts.
Okay.
And it was lost in the mail for 76 years.
I mean, that sounds about right, based on the way the postal service is going.
And it was delivered last month to his widow, who he had not even met when he wrote the letter.
What?
Yeah. So this young man was stationed in Germany in 1945.
Okay.
He wrote a letter home to his mother, just letting her know that he was alive and well, and, you know, that he'd be coming home soon. And the letter said, "Dear Mom, received another letter from you today and was happy to hear that everything is okay. As for myself, I'm fine and getting along okay, but as far as the food, it's pretty lousy most of the time." And then lost, never got to his mother. And then inexplicably, no one can explain this, last month it showed up at a United States Postal Service facility in Pittsburgh.
But the address was his, I guess, childhood home, because if he was sending it home to his mother.
Yes. So then, well, I don't know if you know this, I love the post office. The post office realized that this was like an important letter.
Meanwhile, it wasn't. It literally was a letter sent overseas that was small talk. Hey, I'm cool. The food's not so great. Talk to you later.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful memento.
But it's very funny that that was the contents of the letter.
Yes. Well, they did. So I guess they opened it and they tried to find the man who wrote it. And he passed away a few years ago.
Yeah, because he'd be pretty old now.
Well, yeah, he died in 2015. And obviously his mother is long gone.
Yeah.
But they found an address for his widow, who he met 5 years after he sent the letter.
Wow.
Yeah. And they got it to her.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, she was so excited. I mean, she's also very, very old.
Yeah.
She said, "I just couldn't believe it. And then just his handwriting and everything, it was so amazing." The couple was married for 61 years and raised 5 children.
Wow. Where was it all this time?
No one knows. It was signed, "Love and kisses, your son, Johnny. I'll be seeing you soon, I hope."
I wonder how many, like, relationships or, you know, went bad because someone never received the letter. Like someone sent a letter with, like, you know, like this grand love letter, and then it just, the person never got it.
I hope that doesn't happen too often.
I bet you it happens a lot.
Well, not anymore since no one writes letters, but
yeah, that's what I mean. Like in the old days, like the days when you couldn't like then call the person or whatever, where everybody did correspondence from letter.
Yeah. I know. Well, this one does have, I mean, his mother never got the letter, but his widow did, and it made her very happy.
Well, that's very sweet.
It was like a Christmas gift.
Yeah, I like those kind of stories. That's a good one.
Yeah, this is a good one. All right. Here's another one. This is a tearjerker, this one.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah. A man, his name is Patrick Mitchell.
Okay.
He was 72. He found out that he was diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Oh, Jesus.
I know.
Okay.
And his health began to rapidly decline. So his daughter posted to good old Facebook. She posted to a Facebook group in her hometown of Coronado, California.
Oh, it's pretty there.
Yeah, I bet. It says it's near San Diego.
Yeah.
Anyway, she posted to this local group saying that her father was dying and that she wanted to get ideas from people for adventures they could have together in his last few weeks.
Few weeks?
Yeah. And could anyone like offer up some ideas?
Okay.
And she explained that she didn't want to do tourist activities that they could do anytime. She was looking for more like adventure behind the scene experiences.
Skydiving, you know.
Yeah. And exactly. Well, she started to get all these ideas, but what was more surprising was that people started to offer to take the father on experiences. So they wound up doing quite a few of them. They were offered special tickets to a screening of the Nutcracker. They were given, or they were offered a horse therapy session at a ranch.
Oh.
Yep.
Nice.
This was one that they really liked. Her father was into the Navy. And I think San Diego's a big Navy.
Yeah, that right there is a huge Navy hub.
Yeah. So this couple offered to do a private tour of a US Navy helicopter, which they did, and the dad loved that.
Oh.
That's not a quick tour.
I mean, it's a helicopter. What are you looking at?
I know. Well, I guess they were given a tour of the helicopter hangar plus an in-depth showing of the expansive fleet of aircraft stationed there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think if you're into those things, you could probably spend a lot of time looking at the helicopters.
That's true.
And then at another woman who used to live in Coronado but had moved to Las Vegas and still was part of this group said that if he was well enough to fly to Las Vegas, they got him tickets to see an Ultimate Fighting Championship fight, which I guess he was a big fan of that.
Okay.
And so they did that. They got to see this fight and they were super excited about that. And he had wanted to see Paris, but he couldn't get to Paris. So they stayed at the Paris Hotel in Las Vegas.
Well, that's not nearly similar, but that's still nice. I appreciate the sentiment.
Yes, the matches they saw were very good. And now this daughter has become good friends with all these people who reached out to her.
That's nice.
Very, very sweet. And then her father passed away this month.
Oh, well, you know what, though? That is nice to know that there are people. I mean, God, every story we hear now is just people are awful. So it's a nice reminder that there's good people in the world.
Yes, it was such a sweet story. Oh, and then another guy who was like a violinist came to his house and did a private concert.
Oh, that's nice.
It was very nice. Very, very nice. All right, Anne, and here's one. I'll have to see what you think of this one.
Okay.
This one is, well, this one is not about a love connection.
I just want to point out that all of your love stories so far both involve dead people. People who are no longer with us. Not to say that love doesn't transcend death, but I was not expecting either of those.
Oh, you're right about that.
But
you're right about that.
Yeah.
Well, see what you think of this one. These people are both still alive.
He's dead. Yeah. Okay.
So this story took place in China. There's a 30-year-old woman. Her name is not given. She says that, I don't know. She says that her family felt like she was getting old. She's 30.
Her family felt like she was getting old?
Yeah.
Right. I hope someone does die. And I hope it's whoever said that.
So they arrange for 10 blind dates for her.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
This is a cultural thing, Anna. It's cultural. So she got to date five. And this man wanted to show off his cooking skills and invited her over to his house for dinner.
Okay.
You know, in China, from what I understand, and also from this article, when they have COVID outbreaks, they do extreme lockdowns.
Yeah.
Like, they are not fooling around. They have, like, they have locked people into their houses.
Yeah, like, you can't leave. They're not, they're, that's, it's no joke.
You can't leave, right. So this woman was at this guy's house on a date, and a lockdown happened while she was there.
Oh my God, that's a nightmare.
Yeah, so she couldn't leave. And so she, it's actually still unknown if she's out yet, but she started posting on social media about her being stuck at her date's house. And it was not a love connection. Let's just say that. It's not.
Oh my God. What a nightmare. Can you imagine? I mean.
It is a nightmare. It's not like.
Oh, that would be a good movie. What if the guy was trying to kill her or something?
Well, it sounds like he was a nice enough fellow. She just didn't have any romantic feelings for him.
Yeah.
But she showed pictures of him cooking meals for her, sweeping the floor, working on his laptop. But she said that he was reticent like a wooden mannequin.
What?
I guess he doesn't talk very much and his cooking isn't good.
None of these stories are happy. The first one was okay, I guess.
Yeah, she says, right now I'm still at the man's house. He's an articulate, honest person, and he doesn't talk much. After my video became trending on Weibo, which must be some kind of platform, some friends started calling him. I think it has affected his life. That's why I removed it.
I mean, that sounds like an actual nightmare.
Can you imagine? You go on a blind date, and then you're stuck. At this point, she'd been there for 4 days.
First of all, who goes on a blind date to someone's house, number one? That's my first red flag. No, absolutely not. And number two, especially if a lockdown could happen at any moment, why you wouldn't meet at a restaurant or somewhere where you could easily leave is beyond me.
I know. I'm sure that there are things, you know, again, this is China. There might be cultural things that we don't, know about, but.
Possibly, but it all sounds ridiculous to me.
I know. It'd be so awkward, wouldn't it? It would just be so terribly awkward.
Yeah. To be like, well, this isn't going to work.
No, this is not going to work. And she doesn't even have a change of clothes.
Oh my God. I didn't think about that. No clothes.
No toothbrush.
Oh, what a nightmare. This is an awful story, Chrissy. Awful.
Well, I mean, they're being pleasant to each other. It could be much worse, but.
Could it? I think it sounds pretty bad.
Well, what if you like really didn't like him? It just sounds like he doesn't talk much.
Ugh, what a nightmare. This poor girl. And I say girl because she's 30. She's young.
I wonder on those five other blind dates once she gets out.
I think she's not going to be doing any other blind dates.
Yeah.
I think this is it. Know.
You think this will be... What if they fall in love, Anne?
They're not.
Well, you never know.
They're absolutely not going to fall in love.
After a long enough time, maybe.
That's called Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, it sure is.
Not so bad after all.
Lockdown love. That's the name of the movie.
Yeah, but there it's not love.
I'm telling you.
It's lockdown tolerate.
I'm going to say this. She went from saying he was an inarticulate wooden mannequin to now feeling bad about it. So that could just keep segueing to something else.
That is one of the most depressing things I've ever heard.
It's a sad story.
Yes, it is a sad story for everyone, for her, for him, for us.
Yeah. All right, Anne. Yeah, that was a nightmare story, but perhaps a good segue into the film that we're going to watch this week, which is called The Cutting Edge from 1992.
Yeah.
And this is a story about a figure skater who pairs up with a hockey player. And so I thought, who could give us a great perspective on this film? And you know who came to mind?
Who?
My college friend, Dale.
Oh, why is that?
Well, I'm going to introduce him. Dale is here. Dale and I went to college together, and he was, forgive me if I'm wrong, I believe the captain of our college hockey team. Were you not?
Yes.
Yes.
Dale says begrudgingly.
A long time ago.
Yes, Dale was the captain of the hockey team. And again, Dale, I'm going to throw out a fact that I could, you could correct me on. I believe perhaps the most successful hockey team in Colgate history.
Yes, when we were sophomores, yes.
Sophomores? Well, I thought we were juniors. When we went to, didn't we go to the finals against Wisconsin?
Yes, we played for a national championship against Wisconsin, yes.
Wow, that seems good.
That was crazy. That was Daisy versus Goliath. Colgate was like a 2,600 person school against Wisconsin, which is like 32,000 people.
Did you win?
No, we did not. But thanks for being in our band. It was going well up until that point, Chrissy.
Well, you know, you made it there. I mean, look, that in and of itself is winning. Yeah,
it was a great year, great team, great guys, right? So lots of fun. It was good.
Everyone was extremely excited. I remember when they won the game to go to that game, people were already out and talking about taking a road trip to Wisconsin, which I almost did and then came to my senses.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you go? Who went? You didn't do a road
trip? It's good that you didn't go to Wisconsin because the game was actually in Detroit. So that's probably good.
Chrissy's like, where is everybody?
I think people went, didn't they?
Yeah, actually, I mean, it's a long drive, obviously, from Hamilton, but there's quite a few people from Hamilton there, but not as many as people from Wisconsin, that's for sure. Right?
Yeah. Well, there you have it. But a very accomplished hockey player. And like I said, I think they used to say, was it number 12? Number 12 in the playbook, number one in your heart, Dale Band?
Yeah, I don't know, Chris. That's... I'm sure they say that about everybody, right? So, yeah.
I don't know, Dale. I think you were one of the more popular players there.
Thank you. That's nice of you. Like I said, a long time ago, right? So,
long time ago. All right. So I contacted Dale, and I was like, "We're going to do this movie." And much to my surprise, he told me he had already seen it.
Well, yeah, it's about hockey players.
Of course, not a lot of movies.
It's no slap shot, but it'll have to do.
Very good. And great job pulling that out. That's good.
How do you like that?
Huh? Very good.
Pretty good.
All right. So this is, like I said, this is a story of a sort of a woman of privilege. She's supposed to be from Greenwich, Connecticut, who is a accomplished figure skater, but she basically can't get along with any of her skating partners. And her coach decides to enlist a hockey player whose career was cut short by a hockey injury that left him, he didn't have some peripheral vision. Why then he could figure skate, I don't know, but to be her partner.
Well, that was my first question, because obviously as a hockey player, you have to know how to ice skate. But I would think that the skill set for a hockey player versus a figure skater are quite different. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, could you go out and do spins and double axles?
Well, no, I mean, I can tell you that when you're younger, at least I'll say talk from growing up in Canada, right? So you spend a lot of time on the ice, either through school, outdoor rinks, community rinks, public skating, that kind of stuff. So always you see, you know, kids in middle school, elementary school, boys trying, like hockey players trying to do single axles or whatever, right? Which is not that difficult to do, but it's when you get in, yeah. So when you get into double axles,
seems hard to me.
Double axles and all the tight spins, that's just beyond what any normal hockey player would do. Not that they couldn't if they decided to train like that, right? But it's definitely a Hollywood story. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 50% of the movie is them doing different exercises together. Like, there's just a very long montage of them doing ballet and some sort of pumping iron. It was like Rocky, but not as interesting.
Well, wait, but here's on the skating question. Here's my question, because when the main guy is played, his name is D.B. Sweeney. He plays a character named Doug Dorsey.
Yeah. I like that guy.
The whole time, well, let me just say this. The whole time I was like, clearly they couldn't get John Cusack, because I felt like he was acting like John Cusack the whole time.
What do you mean?
I felt like you couldn't get John Cusack, so now this guy is like sort of imitating the way he would act.
I disagree.
All right. Well, that John Cusack, also from Chicago. Mm-hmm. But when he first initially starts training with her, it seems like he can't even skate. Like, is it difficult to go from hockey skates to figure skates? He keeps falling down.
Well, that's because he's an actor, Chris. He's not really. Most actors don't skate. So you look at all the hockey movies. Most of the guys who are skating aren't, when they are actually skating with their face, you can see them. They're not very good. It's when they pull away. And then
I don't think that was DB doing the spins.
100%.
No, but I'm saying it was part of the plot that when they started, he couldn't keep up with her. He kept, like, they kept making the thing about the toe.
The toe. What was that? Like the toe heel or whatever.
Figure skates have picks right in the front of them, so you can actually dig your toe in to be able to leap yourself in the air to do your axles and all that kind of stuff.
Oh.
So you don't have
to. That's what it's for? Like to be able to do like a quick stop?
No, to actually like take a chunk out of the ice to give you, launch you up into the air.
Oh, God. That's awful.
Yeah, that's what they're for.
I never knew that.
So it's a totally different skate for sure. Same edges though, right? I mean, lots of young hockey players today grow up with power skating coaches, and a lot of power skating coaches are figure skaters.
Oh,
really?
I mean, it's a fast sport, but it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. And so it's not easy, but it's a great sport for sure.
So you're saying, I will mention both of Dale's sons are hockey players currently.
I don't have it in me. I don't have the heart of a champion. I don't. I go, if it's remotely hard, I just go, that's it. I'm good. I'm done now. So.
Yeah, but Dale, if you put on a pair of figure skates right now, wouldn't you at least be able to skate? I don't think you'd be falling down.
Well, that's a great question, Chris, because I've never actually worn figure skates. So
never?
No. So, I mean, the big difference on figure skates is you're, not to get technical, but you're pushing a little bit more from front to back, where in hockey skates, you're really going out, right? Almost on a diagonal. So you're, because you can't do that in figure skates because of the toe pick, right? So it's a little bit different, but use the same muscles, use the same leg muscles, obviously, and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. Well, look at this. I knew we could get the technical expertise here.
This one guy's opinion, but figure skaters are phenomenal skaters, very powerful, right? Same as, I mean,
look at
hockey players are the world today, but playing hockey is all about skating, right? It's a different game today. You have to have speed to play. So it's totally different.
Hockey's like the hardest because you're ice skating and doing the actual goals. I feel like that's much harder than like soccer. You know, kicking a ball, no offense, Shropshires, kicking a ball down the thing. That's just using your feet. You don't have blades attached.
No, I would agree. But Dale, when you play hockey, you don't really think about the skating, do you? Isn't it just like, it would be like running?
Yeah, no, it's just second nature, right? For sure. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I can't imagine being like that, but I would, watching hockey, I don't think they're really thinking that much about that they're going to fall down skating. It's just like, putting on a pair of running shoes and running around.
Absolutely.
How come in hockey people are allowed to beat the shit out of each other?
Because
like fighting is like in every game.
You know, I think a long time ago, and yes, I said now it's totally different, right? I mean,
is it? I don't know. I feel like that's why they have penalty boxes. They're like, you punch that guy dead square in the face, and a hockey player will get punched. Nose will be broken. They're out for 2 minutes and then they're back in the game.
No,
that's the only sport I know people do that. Any other sport, somebody breaks their nose, they're out. They're like, I'm taking gonna go ahead and take off for the rest of the day.
See, I don't even have to say how tough they are, and you just said it, so that's good, right? But
I mean,
there's no doubt they made it. Like, it's a huge push to try and get fighting out of the game. It's way different today than it was back in the 70s and 80s, obviously. You know, most of the not professional hockey players, right? But most in college, you can't fight or you get suspended. Junior hockey now, if you fight, you're gone for that game plus another game. So they're really trying to clean it up. So very different than it used to be.
So what was it? Just like the culture of it and how?
Yeah, I think, well, I think it's allowed, right? And it's the one you're allowed to fight. So that's big, the difference. If you weren't allowed,
it's just wild.
If they took it out of the game, then you wouldn't have it, right? But the big thing is, at least if you talk to the people who defend it, right, it's all about the players themselves policing the game, right? So that if you took out fighting, you'd have people going after each other and trying to hurt your best players, all that kind of good stuff, right? So at least if you keep in fighting and have an enforcer, that kind of takes care of that stuff.
Look at that. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, that's the thought process, right? So
Dale, did you ever get into a fight?
When I was younger and played junior, absolutely. Absolutely.
Dale was picking asses left and right.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that, but yet there are times, you know, when you play, you don't really have a choice, right? You get into a spot.
You have to defend yourself. Yeah. Somebody's coming at you. You got to.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy freak.
Wait, you're saying in college that was not allowed though?
Yeah. I mean, Chrissy, we were there, played 4 years. There was, I can only remember one fight. That was it. I mean, lots of other stuff, but not a full on fight. Right. So.
Were you involved in that fight, Dale?
From tussles.
No, of course I was. Of course I wasn't, Chrissy. Jesus.
Good for you, Dale.
He didn't start that one. He finished it, Chrissy.
No, at that point, you're just shaking your head. Fighting in college is ridiculous, right? You have full face masks. Why would you be fighting?
I see Dale as a peacemaker anyway.
Yeah, he's the captain. He had to bring everybody together.
Yeah, very rational human being. All right. Well, okay. So back to the movie. So these two get paired up together.
I had so many questions.
Just about hockey. Sport. See, we're learning, Anne. We're learning.
Mm-hmm.
These two get paired up together. Of course, normal course of a Hollywood movie. They don't like each other. They're both unhappy. And through the course of their training, they start to develop feelings for one another.
Yeah.
Right.
The old opposites attract.
Right. And at the same time, they're pursuing Olympic glory, let's say.
Yeah. And what was supposed to be the time frame there? Like, how long was this training?
The movie was 4 years because the movie started at the Calgary Olympics in 1988.
And this was the 92.
And then they were working towards 92.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So hats off to Terry O'Quinn, the dad who kept that mustache look for 4 years.
Right. Oh my gosh. That I did not realize until I saw his name that was the guy from Lost. I was like, who is this guy? It was driving me crazy.
He's also starred around the same time in a movie called The Stepfather and The Stepfather 2, in which he played an evil stepfather that murdered families. It's real good.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Stepfather's great. No mustache in that one.
Yes. Well, I'll just say, so the movie starts in 88, but then when she loses at the Olympics, they skip 2 years because during that time, the Doug character has gone to work in a factory, as one would.
Yeah.
And she has been like cycling through apparently 8 different partners before landing on Doug. So it's really like a 2 year span that we're watching.
Okay. So he learned how to become a figure skater in 2 years.
Yeah. Is that possible, Dale?
To that caliber, to go to the Olympics?
I would say not possible at the level to be in the Olympics. No, no way. That's crazy.
That was a lot of the stuff I saw online, people saying that was most unrealistic. Even if he was an accomplished hockey player, he would not be up to Olympic caliber in 2 years.
I mean, not only that, it's like, certainly there's a roster of highly qualified figure skaters. And the fact that they even were like, let's just go to this hockey player.
Well, and that's how bad she was, though, because they couldn't find anybody else. He was the last choice.
Yeah, they said, let's change tactics.
But there's no way you would be able to do that. No, not even close.
And she also now has a new coach. Her old coach, they didn't get along very well. She has a new coach. His name is Anton, who, interestingly enough, the actor who played Anton was British. I had a feeling he was not Russian.
Oh, really?
He was supposed to be Russian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she, of course, has a fiance who's a Harvard MBA, and he's off in London. And of course, it's like the clash of the two worlds, the sort of like street savvy hockey player versus the highly educated Ivy League businessman.
Yeah.
Who, of course, she stops being interested in him and starts being more interested in Doug.
And who can blame her? That boyfriend was a real snore.
He was in a non-speaking role in Field of Dreams.
That's his claim to fame.
He was in Field of Dreams. He was the dad who comes out of the cornfield.
Oh, that makes every man weep. Does Field of Dreams make you cry, Dale?
I mean, I love the movie, but make me cry? No, but I love the movie.
I feel like every man weeps at that scene.
Well, when he's dealing with his dad?
Yeah, when the dad comes out of the field.
Emotional, yes. Brings back good memories, yes, but no.
I think you had tears in your eyes, maybe.
Emotional? No, I wouldn't say tears, though, Anne. I have to think about it, right? You know.
I don't know.
I mean, I get tears now watching certain commercials, so probably. I haven't seen Field of Dreams in a long time. I'm a lot older now, right? So, right?
Watch it again. I bet the water works. Yeah.
Well, also interesting for that actor to be probably more well known for a movie that he had not one line in, Field of Dreams, than for a movie like this where he was a supporting role. I don't think anyone would be like, oh, you were in The Cutting Edge versus, oh, you were in Field of Dreams.
He didn't look familiar to me at all, this guy. That guy.
Oh, I didn't immediately say Field of Dreams, but then when I started reading it, I was like, oh yeah, he's the guy that came out of the corner.
Okay, Chrissy, since you have so much information about this movie, how much money did Cutting Edge gross at the box office?
Oh, I did look that up. I think it was not, well, let me say this. It was not a flop because they made two sequels and two TV movies. Really?
They did?
Wow. Yes. Well, they made, just so you know, they made The Cutting Edge Going for the Gold in 2006. Now that was 14 years later.
Starring the same people?
No. D.B. Sweeney and Moira Kelly, the two leads, I guess at the time the movie was popular enough that they were talking about sequels, and they both made a pact they wouldn't do a sequel without the other one. And they got a script and they were like, we don't like it. So they didn't do it. Though they did reunite also in 2006 for a movie called Two Tickets to Paradise.
Oh, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, D.B. Sweeney actually wrote and directed that film.
Look at him. Look, I like him and I like her too.
Anyway, so then what they did was when they made the sequel, it's about their child. So I guess they're supposed to have gotten married, who's now going for the gold. But since not enough time passed in the sequel, they changed the date of the original Olympics so that the girl would be old enough.
That's dumb.
Things you do to make something work, right?
Yeah, they're like, no, it's fine. That was actually the 85 Olympics. That's dumb.
Yeah, so they had The Cutting Edge Going for the Gold in 2006, The Cutting Edge Chasing the Dream in 2008, and The Cutting Edge Fire and Ice in 2010.
Did anybody ever get the gold? Because we don't even know if they get the gold in this one.
I know. Well, the gold was that they fell in love, Anne.
Yeah, I guess that was the intentional reason to leave it out. It doesn't even matter because they won in their hearts.
In their hearts. Well, and the other thing is that they kind of threw in at the end, which I thought was ridiculous, was there was this difficult move.
Yeah, what was that called? It was like the Pachinko or something. It looked terrifying, by the way. I'm like, you would full die if that went wrong. 100%. Somebody would be dead.
That's why nobody has really tried it.
Yeah.
Except for Will Ferrell in Blades of Glory, I would say. He did it. Well, that was the other thing. They do this move where he swings her around by the feet and her head is always narrowly missing the ice.
Yeah.
And they show several times that they mess up. I think she would be in a full body cast. She just kind of like groans and gets back up.
The heart of a champion.
Heart of a champion. Someone throws you on the ice.
I mean, I wouldn't know, but I think so.
That'd be tough. Play on the ice, Chris. You know that.
God, if I slipped on regular ice just walking, I'm like, I'm done for the day. That's it.
So anyway, so they have to perfect this crazy move, and then they decide not to do it because it's too dangerous. Actually, I think Blades of Glory probably stole part of the storyline from The Cutting Edge, now that I'm thinking about this. And then they wound up in the final Olympic program where they've been criticized for their short program because they were mad at each other and they're like, they don't have any chemistry together. He, as they are going out onto the ice, he confesses his love for her, and she does not reciprocate that, but she says, instead, we're going to do this move.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, they successfully execute this move. And then, as they're getting their applause, she tells him she loves him.
I wonder what she would have said if she fell. That would have been the true test. If it went horribly and she was like waiting for the medic.
Right.
I do love you too.
Right before she loses consciousness.
Yeah.
Dale, this is what we do. We give movies, we rate them on a Muldoon scale. So if they're a good movie, we give them a Muldoon. If they're a bad movie, we give it a Muldon't. And if we're in between, we give it a Muldeen. Okay. All right. So where are you at with this
movie? Oh, absolutely Muldon't then. It's horrible.
Jeez, right? Dale. Oh,
I mean, it's a bad movie in all honesty, but that's just me, right?
Do you know what drove me crazy is the way all the shots where it was like slow motion, they kept cutting it into like close-ups of their feet and then slow motion. It was like giving me motion sickness.
Yeah, I agree. I was like, God, they really couldn't show any of them skating because they never show, either they're showing their feet or they're showing them from super far away in the dark, or they're showing their faces. I'm like, these two must have not been able to do any of anything this at all.
Or they were showing the crowd, but it was like from a perspective of being extremely disoriented. Like it was just like the rooms was spinning constantly. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. I felt like even though this was from 92, I felt like that was a very 80s kind of look. That
yeah, which normally I would be on board with, but it was making me a little sick.
I would agree with that. I thought it was a lot older than 92.
And they did it a lot. It happened a lot. I was like, again with this?
Yeah, it was. Those scenes were not very satisfying. Let's just say that. Oh, well, I'll say I did read that neither Moira Kelly or D.B. Sweeney could skate before they started this film. So they
or had after.
To spend 3 weeks learning to, sorry, not 3 weeks, 3 months learning to skate.
Yeah, that's probably the problem. They only took 3 months, right?
All right, well, Dale, I'm going to this might be surprising. I'm going to give this movie a Muldoon. I actually enjoyed it.
Oh my God, Chris.
Really? I am surprised by that one.
Totally. You watched it again?
You know, I don't think I ever saw it.
I never saw it either. I thought I did. And then I was like, I actually don't think I watched it.
None of it seemed familiar. I'll just say that.
Yeah. And I like him and I like her. I give it in the middle. I'm Muldoon.
You're Muldoon?
Because it was a little boring at times.
Yeah.
But I liked them. And I mean, you know, would I stop? If I'm like watching TV and that shows up, am I going to be like, I'm stopping what I'm doing and watching this? No.
No, I don't think I would either. But it was entirely predictable. But I don't know. I kind of enjoyed it in a weird way.
Well, I get Chrissy, what other hockey movies have you seen? I'm going to ask you that question.
I don't know. Have I seen any hockey movies?
Youngblood.
Oh, that's the Rob Lowe one. Yeah. Right?
Oh, I don't know if I saw Youngblood.
That was like 80s.
That was 80s? Did he play a hockey player?
Yep.
I mean, Slapshot's the most famous one,
yeah,
right?
Without a doubt. Yeah.
No. I don't think I saw Slapshot.
Oh. It's funny.
Oh, Chrissy. I can't believe that after we went to school together for 4 years, you've never seen Slapshot, but a whole nother one.
That's a good one. That's a classic.
Mystery Alaska is pretty good.
Wait, Dale, which is the one they filmed at Colgate?
Slapshot.
Ah, look at that.
I still don't think I saw it. With Paul Newman? Yeah,
that's right.
Interesting. But Dale, I was too busy going to hockey games to see a hockey movie.
I don't even know if that's even true. So, but maybe for the first period, Chrissy, or maybe the third. I can't. It's maybe hit and miss in the middle, probably. Right?
Maybe.
I don't know, but it is Hamilton. I mean, on a Saturday night, not a lot else going on, right?
and even then, she didn't go.
I was with you in spirit all the time, Dale.
I'll take it.
Dale, would you ever, for the love of a woman, try to become a male figure skater in pairs?
How long have you been thinking about that question? Love of a woman. I just don't find myself ever getting into the spot that I would want to be a male figure skater.
You know what was interesting in the movie? They made the big scene where he's like talking to his brother about, well, now I'm a figure skater. And it was like controversial for some reason. It's like, he's still an athlete. Like, I don't, that whole part was very weird to me.
Yes.
And then, well, then the brother came around, of course.
Yeah, but it's like, what do you need to come around for? It's like, what are you doing?
Working in a bar or something, right? Or something like that.
I'm like, let the guy do his thing. Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, I think that was all obviously some kind of statement on being macho, because he lied to his brother and told him he joined the Merchant Marines.
Right.
A little different.
A little different than skating in a private rink in Greenwich, yeah. Connecticut.
I know. I'd be like, I'm living the good life. I'm getting doing aerobics every morning.
Yeah. Living the life. Everything paid for.
Yeah.
All you have to do is skate. Show up and skate.
Dale, what's your favorite movie that's like a, I mean, I'm gonna ask you about a movie. You tell me what you think of this one. Rudy.
I think Rudy's a great movie. Absolutely.
I'm with Dale.
I wanted you to be like, it's garbage, because that's what I think.
I mean, I really enjoyed it. I've seen it a few times, obviously, right? Watched it with my boys. So I think it's got some great lessons in it for sure. Love that it's kind of on a true story. So I think that's makes it even that much better. So, but it doesn't.
I feel like he's not good. Like, he's not good at it. So then guess what, Rudy? You don't get to play.
Oh, Ann.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't think that's what it was all about though. Right, Ann? So, I mean,
I don't know, because I said, this guy's an asshole is what I said about Rudy. And guess what? Turns out he ended up like getting in trouble for like stealing money or something. And I was right.
The real Rudy?
The real Rudy. Oh. I said, I'm telling you, this guy seems to think he can get whatever he wants, even if he hasn't earned it. And guess what? That's true.
So did he steal the money when he was there as an older or?
No, like after like his normal job. I think he was like an investment banker or something.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I remember that being, and I remember feeling vindicated because I'm the only person that doesn't seem to like Rudy.
Oh, I like Rudy.
The man or the movie.
Yeah, no, I thought it was good. No, I enjoyed it.
You're right, Anne. He was charged with securities fraud in connection with his role as chairman of Rudy Beverage, which is his own
company. That's not a good thing, for sure.
No, because he felt like he was owed that money or whatever. Like, he had a sense, that was my problem with Rudy, a sense of entitlement.
All right, I think you're getting a little crazy here.
I'm just saying, I was like, you're not good at it, Rudy. Like, sorry.
Oh, Anne.
I don't think he was entitled at all. I think he was promised something and he wanted the person to live up to his promise. That was the big thing, right, Ann? So.
Oh, I don't know. Did somebody promise him that he could play football?
His coach told him that the next season he would actually be able to play a game. And then the coach left. So, and then the new coach came in and then didn't want to have anything to do with him. At least that's how I remember it, Ann, right? So.
But it's not the new coach's fault that he's not living up to the new coach is like, beat it.
Absolutely. But I think it was phenomenal. I mean, I love the fact that his teammates, I have no idea if this is true or not. His teammates stood up for him and said, you got to let Rudy play one game because of everything he meant. Right. And how much effort. It did, right?
I guess the Dale, this is why I don't have the heart of a champion. I just don't, I'm like, no, Rudy.
You know, I think, and you know, what's interesting is that if you talk to most, I'll say men and women who play team sports, there's somebody like that on every team, right? Who probably doesn't have as much talent, but outworks everybody else. And at some point you want them to be successful, right? And achieve their dream.
Whatever. Oh, in general, yes. I'm just speaking specifically of the man, Rudy.
According to Rudy, the movie was 92% true. He says the players did not lay down their jerseys, but rather the team captain and one other player requested that he be allowed to play.
Yeah. I like the movie part. I thought that was good. I liked it.
Yeah. So, can you imagine? Yeah. I don't think the movie would have been as good if it was just the one guy, like, just let him go on for like one
minute. Let him play so he can shut up about it. Right.
Yeah. Like, this guy has been in my ear for years and I can't take another minute. Just let him on the field.
All right, Dale, here's a question for you.
We're just peppering questions that have nothing to do with this movie, by the way. I don't know how we even got about Rudy. I don't even know. But
Anne gets very fired up about things. You have to realize that. If you could recommend one hockey movie for someone to watch, what would it be?
one hockey movie. Well, I mean, I think, well, Slapshot, well, it depends on what you want. I want to be entertained, or you want to kind of know what the behind the scenes of hockey is all about. Right.
Mm.
So if you want to be entertained, I think Miracles obviously is a good movie. Great movie. Right. Yeah. That story wouldn't go.
Oh, that's an Olympic one, right? Where they like go.
Acid,
they,
right? So yeah. That's a, yeah. They do a good job with that for sure. But if you want to know about the way the bus trips are, what the locker room's like, all behind the scenes, Slapshot is by far the best movie to watch. So.
Oh, now I have to watch that. So you're saying that that's accurate in terms of the coach, the team dynamics.
I would say yes. I mean, it's a little, I mean, it's back in the 70s, right? And some of the stuff is not really, how did I say that? I'm looking at thing in the movie. I'm like, okay, that's a lot of that's not.
I don't feel like it's PC. It's
not politically correct at all, right? And some of the stuff is crazy, yeah. Without a doubt. But, you know, the locker rooms, there's teammates like that on every team that you play on, right? So you have to think, Chris, right? Like there's a guy who all he cares about is women. He's a womanizer. Well, every team has one of those people. You have the guy who's intellectual, who doesn't want to be like everybody else. They have those guys, right? I mean, they do a phenomenal job. And the best thing about Slapshot is that the screenplay was written by a wife of a hockey player or sister of a hockey player.
Really? I didn't know that.
So she traveled on the road trips to put the screenplay together. And that's how they came up with the story. So that itself kind of makes it, right? Because it's not politically correct at all. But the fact that, I'm sure back in the 70s, it was pretty true, right? So.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't imagine a 70s hockey team was being politically correct. Or an 80s, or probably a 90s.
Or a 2000s.
All right. So it looks like between the three of us, we've spanned the spectrum of liking this movie.
Yeah.
Dale hated it. I liked it. Anne is in the middle.
I'm in the middle. It's fine. It's fine.
Fine's the worst word. You know that, right, Anne? Fine. Right? That means it's bad, but you just didn't want to say it's bad.
No. If I hated it, I would say I hated it. You might be right, though, because there's like no passion at all about Fine. It's just like you don't have a real reaction. Yeah. So, yeah, I probably would rather someone really hate it or really love it.
Agreed.
Yeah, but I don't think Dale realizes the caliber of films that we watch on this podcast. So therefore, it really is more.
I was shocked at this one. I can tell you that much. So,
you know which one we watch? Did you ever see Poison Ivy?
Oh,
yes, yeah. Probably 1992. Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, you know, I think I did.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah,
and
was she a psycho or something? Was she a babysitter, or psycho or something?
She ends up like killing the wife and stuff and having an affair with Tom Skerritt. I love that movie. And I made Christy watch it.
I did not. All right. But regardless, I think we've learned a lot about hockey today.
Yeah.
We've learned that Dale, not even for the love of a woman, would become a male figure skater.
I'd never be in that point, I don't think. So my wife asked me to do it. Of course I would do it, but.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Not for any other reason, though.
There you go.
Oh, we learned that he is going to cry the next time he watches Field of Dreams.
Yes, it's funny. I almost cried when he walked out for the Sox game out of the park.
Oh, you forget about it. You're definitely going to cry this time.
Wait, you almost cried when Kevin Costner walked out?
Well, so when.
Yeah, they did that whole thing.
Chrissy, the White Sox and who was it? And the Yankees?
I don't even know. I just remember reading all about it next day and how all
the White Sox and Yankees played at the ballpark Field of Dreams in the summer. And Kevin Costner, all the players walked out from the field and Kevin Costner walked out too. It was really, really cool. So I thought that was very cool. Yeah.
Something about Field of Dreams, man. Makes people cry.
All right, Dale. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today. I'm delighted that you agreed to do this.
Me too.
My pleasure, guys. It was great seeing you.
And it was so nice to meet you, Dale.
Absolutely.